This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
Blockbuster deal yesterday in the NFL. Steph Diggs going from the Buffalo Bills to the Houston Texans. We are Unsportsmanlike, presented by Progressive Insurance. Making it easy to save money when you bundle your auto policy with home, condo, and renters. Make sure you go to Progressive. You'll earn a multi-policy discount. Easy to bundle, easy to save. Visit Progressive.com. Happy National Burrito Day to everybody. Just thought I'd slip that in, of course.
It is
National Burrito Day. Yes, I just saw on the internet.
Ooh.
National Burrito Day.
Oh, I love a burrito. I love a good... Now, I have never had a burrito in California.
Okay.
I have friends who have moved from the East Coast to California that said they don't know if they could ever leave California because the burritos are so elite that they have them 3 to 4 times a week. So wow. I feel like I need to spend some time in LA, some time in Cali, and see what the burrito scene is like there.
Interesting. I think the regular burrito is overrated. I have to go with the breakfast burrito.
Oh, I love a breakfast burrito. Really?
But the breakfast burrito, to me, that's the one, chef's kiss. Like, I'm all in on the breakfast burrito, but anytime other than breakfast, I'm out. I don't know
really?
What it is. I'm out.
Is it because of the beans? Is that why?
I think that might be it.
The rice?
That's why.
Yeah, I don't want to have a Dan Orlovsky situation, so I think that's probably what it is.
Yeah, I'm not a big bean person there, but it's interesting. Yeah. Like, I love Mexican food, but like, if you say to me fajitas, burritos, enchiladas, quesadillas, tacos, I've realized later in my life, every single one of them is exactly the same for me. It's just chicken, cheese, and rice. So it just is the shape in which they wrap the wraps. But do you have, Smalls, you've had a very strong reaction to the burrito. Do you have a favorite amongst the Mexican food?
I'm a taco girl. I love a good taco. Hard shell, soft shell.
Yeah.
I'm never going to deny a taco. I love a good fish taco,
yeah.
Steak taco. I love a good street taco. I think tacos are the elite vehicle as far as Mexican foods are concerned.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Although the enchiladas are pretty damn good. The quesadilla. Yes. The quesadilla is pretty good now. And you can do that a lot of different ways.
Whoa.
I think he's saying that on purpose, Pat. I'm not sure.
I'm saying it on purpose, Pat.
Okay.
Relax.
Okay, just making sure.
I'm saying it on purpose.
That was crazy.
I love a good quesadilla.
Oh, my gosh.
Are we just going to change the name now? We're changing the name of quesadilla?
Okay, quesadilla, if you want to have the proper pronunciation.
No, let's all get,
I didn't react that way.
Yeah, a movie, quesadilla.
I preferred it my way, quesadilla. But
let's all get some dillas after the show.
Yeah, there you don't go. Say that. You don't say, I'm going to get a dia after the show. You say, let's get a dilla.
Get a dia.
But, Canty, this is a very strong take from you that I did not know, your food take, that basically you're saying that the breakfast burrito, taco, whatever it is, may be better than the lunch or dinner version of that.
I don't think that's a hot take at all. I think that's just actually correct.
I think it's a hot take.
Is it because there's eggs in the breakfast burrito and not in the regular burrito? Is it the eggs?
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. I'm not the whole rice and beans thing. It can get kind of, I don't know. This is like a lot of filler calories that I don't need.
Oh, I love it.
But with the eggs, with the bacon and the cheese, and add in some potatoes in there too. Oh. And you could have some salsa, you could have some ketchup, it doesn't matter however you want to do it, whatever your lubricant for your burrito is, you can go a lot of different ways. But, I mean, it's just absolutely phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. And if you want to change your pace, swap out the bacon for the sausage, I mean, it's great. It's great. It's absolutely phenomenal. Breakfast burrito, all in on. Other burritos, not so much.
888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Canty doesn't think he has a hot take, but he does. Is the breakfast burrito better than the lunch or dinner burrito? That is what CC is saying here. I totally disagree. I think Small is disagreeing on a National Burrito Day here on ESPN Radio, of course. Now, we also saw, obviously, the blockbuster trade yesterday between the Buffalo Bills and the Houston Texans, where Steph Diggs goes to the Houston Texans. So, let's talk about it first from the Bills' perspective. This is, in many ways, a vote of confidence in their quarterback, Josh Allen, saying, you know what, clearly you are not as comfortable as we want you to be when Steph Diggs is around, and thus we want to make sure that you are in the maximum amount of comfort, even if that means we take a $31 million dead cap hit. But what it also means is that no matter who we have as wide receiver, you have to make them better. You will not have the high-end talent, top-end talent that Steph Diggs has shown throughout his career. It is your job to take B-level receivers and make them into an A-level receiver. I believe that is what you're supposed to do, guys, with a franchise quarterback. The question now becomes, is Josh Allen that level of franchise quarterback?
Well, I think this upcoming season becomes a referendum on Josh Allen. I mean, we're not just talking about the player, but we're also talking about the guy that sets the culture that in hopes of having sustained success. We have no proof of concept that Josh Allen is a good quarterback without Stephon Diggs. Like, when Josh Allen started to ascend is when they made the move to trade for Stephon Diggs. Before that, Josh Allen was a question mark. So, based on what has transpired, knowing that Josh Allen was the one that signed off on the decision that Brandon Beed made to trade Steph Diggs to Houston, I think this puts him squarely in the crosshairs in terms of elevating this franchise above the talent level that is on the offensive side of the ball. And let's be honest, when it comes to what this team has done in terms of reshaping their roster and the defensive changes that they're going to be going through personnel-wise, this is on Josh Allen to make the general manager and the head coach right. Think about all of the leadership that they're losing. Trey White is gone. Jordan Poyer is gone. They're losing those guys on the back end of their defense, guys that have been in a leadership role there for a really long time. Matt Milano's coming back from an injury. I mean, remember, Tremaine Edmonds left a couple of years ago in free agency. They have gone through a talent drain on the defensive side of the ball. It is going to be up to Josh Allen to not only overcome the loss of Stephon Diggs, but to overcome all of the salary cap casualties that this team has experienced over the last two off seasons. We're going to find out whether or not Josh Allen is truly an elite quarterback. For all the people that be caping for Josh Allen, we're going to find out this season if he's somebody that can be that force multiplier, which is what we would expect from top five players at the quarterback position in this league.
Yeah, you're right. We are going to find out because without Steph Diggs, Josh Allen was inconsistent those first two seasons since he arrived on the scene. Josh Allen became a 4,000-yard passer and hasn't dipped below that since. He's been above that mark ever since because he and Steph Diggs joined forces. And I do think it's a bit of a risk for Buffalo to remove a talent like that on the offensive side of the football, but that just tells you where the relationship was between Steph Diggs and Josh Allen and the organization. We had heard rumors that there had been some tension percolating from quite some time. Obviously, there was some social media activity that Steph Diggs tried to separate himself from, some that he contributed to, but the fact that they're willing to eat $31 million to move on from this person, despite him being very productive, shows you exactly where the relationship was.
Listen to the players that they've lost this offseason. They lost Gabe Davis, their number two wide receiver. So think about it. You not only just you traded away your number one wide receiver after your number two wide receiver left in free agency. Think about that. That's the kind of conviction that they had on this move being addition by subtraction. We're not only going to move on from the player and eat $31 million in dead money, but we've gotten rid of the top two receivers in one offseason on our roster. So you got rid of him. You moved on from him. Nyheim Hines is gone. Leonard Floyd is gone. Mitch Morse, their center, is gone. Tre'Davious White, gone. Dane Jackson, another corner, gone. They traded away Ryan Bates, an offensive lineman, gone.
Jordan Poyer,
gone.
Mm-hmm.
Like, think about all of the talent that is walking out of the door in Buffalo. Josh Allen damn well better make this work. He better believe that he better make them right in terms of how good he is. And his cap hit this year is going to triple from what it was last year. He's got to make the general manager and the head coach right. Their belief in him damn well better be right. If it's not, then this is going to be disastrous for Buffalo.
So as you just outlined all that talent going out the door, do you think the Bills' window to contend is still open?
If your answer is no, but before you answer, CeCe, I just want to point something out for context for everybody listening. If the answer is no, I don't believe we can say that Josh Allen is some elite quarterback, right? Because if you're you could have Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins walk out the door, and I think you would say that the Cincinnati Bengals still have a shot because of Joe Burrow.
Yeah.
Lamar Jackson literally had no wide receivers in years past, and they were in the mix every single year, and he won an MVP, right? So if the answer is no, which it's okay if it is, we cannot put Josh Allen on that level of player.
I'm not going to say no because I still believe they're going to win the AFC East. And I still think that if they're hosting a home playoff game, knowing the track record of the head coach and the quarterback, that they'll be able to get to the divisional round. They've won a playoff game each of the last four seasons. So, I mean, I'm not going to say that they're not a contender, although I don't think that they're on the same level as the Baltimore Ravens, the Cincinnati Bengals, the Kansas City Chiefs, obviously, and now the Houston Texans after the move yesterday. Like, I think there are levels to this. And so if we're talking about the best teams in the AFC, I think the Buffalo Bills enter the conversation at that fifth spot. So it is a little bit of a dip, a little bit of a regression based on what they were projected to be in years past.
So playoff team contender, question mark, rather than playoff team contender exclamation point like we would say about Houston or about Baltimore or about Cincinnati.
That's a fair way to frame it.
Okay.
That's a fair way to frame it.
All right, we're going to get the Texans side of this trade in a couple of minutes here, but let's talk to Bill in Northern Kentucky listening on 1530 AM. What's up, Bill?
Good morning, guys. How are y'all doing today?
Morning.
Good. I got a breakfast burrito story for you guys, and I got to agree. I like the breakfast burrito, but it's not better than the other Mexican food. I'll go with the street taco.
That's a good one.
But on
Hold on, Bill. We weren't saying that. That wasn't the question. The question was, is the breakfast burrito better than the regular burrito? Not is it better than tacos or anything like that. Is the breakfast burrito better than the regular burrito?
What would you call it on that one? Yep, I agree.
There it is. There it is.
There it is.
You co-signed.
Mike in San Francisco listening on KNBR. What's up, Mike?
Hey, what's happening, guys? You know what? I'm going to just answer that question. Chris, I love you, but I hate you because I'm a Patriot fan. But at the end of the day, you've obviously never been to San Francisco. You're out of your damn mind. The breakfast burrito isn't even close. Not even close, by the way. Talk a shrimp and steak burrito, hold the rice, fajita style with sauteed peppers and onions on it. There's no chance that a breakfast burrito is even close to that. And that's all I got to say. And, oh, by the way, breakfast burritos are smaller, too, by the way.
Oh.
So the lunch and dinner burritos are way bigger. They're like logs. They're like fire logs.
Really?
Out here. So just all I can tell you is come visit and you'll change your damn mind. I guarantee that.
Yeah, well, I mean, that goes to Smalls' point about California, right, in terms of the burritos.
Just said fajita style, though. Like, are you just having a wrapped up fajita or are you having a burrito? Like, I feel like if you hold the rice and beans on the thing, then it's not necessarily the
it's not a burrito.
The burrito.
It's a wrap.
Yeah.
So, right. It's just like you would go to like a deli theoretically and say like I love a chicken wrap with peppers and whatever else. Like that becomes a wrap. The burrito is probably it's probably rice and beans, but at minimum you need one of them.
Also, the condiments, the salsa, the guac, the sour cream,
yes. That
is hugely important in the construction of the burrito. And no you doubt. Can do that for a breakfast burrito or a regular burrito.
Yeah.
888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. If you want to jump in, National Burrito Day. Is the breakfast burrito better than a regular burrito? Plus, coming up, Steph Diggs is on the Houston Texans. How good will they be this year? Excuse me. We will get to that next on Sportsmanlike, presented by Progressive Insurance.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
Houston Texans make a huge move yesterday. They go out, guys, and they get Steph Diggs.
Well done, Jovante, by the way, with the rejoin music. Seems appropriate. Big move for Houston. Big move for the H-Town. Played a little Drake at the bump back. Makes sense.
So when we look at this situation, guys, we know that Houston's doing the right thing relative to spending the money around the rookie quarterback contract. Are they spending it on the right guy? And the reason I ask that is T. Higgins, potentially available.
Yep.
Brandon Ayuk, potentially available. Maybe just signing additional free agents. Maybe using draft capital to get somebody. So conceptually, they got it right. I think we're all in agreement on that. Did they get the player right for this opportunity?
Well, Ev, I'm assuming that the asking price from those other players and those other teams was too high for the Houston Texans. Like, that's how I have to look at this thing. Remember, the Texans did the dance with the Minnesota Vikings and gave away their first-round pick. I mean, well, they didn't give away. They got a second-round pick in return the following season. But they moved off of that pick. And so I'm not sure that it would have been a situation where you want to mortgage future draft capital in order to make a move for T. Higgins or Brandon Ayuk and then pay that player exactly what they're looking for. Because remember, the wide receiver market, you're starting at $25 million and going up from there. I mean, CeeDee Lamb is probably going to be poised to get north of $30 million. Same with Justin Jefferson. So if you're in that upper echelon, which those two other receivers would be, then that would be the numbers that you're looking at. And if you're the Texans, you don't have to pay out a signing bonus to Stephon Diggs. He costs you $19 million in cash and it amounts to a second-round draft pick. It seems like it makes sense given where the franchise is at and given all the other spending that they've done on the defensive side of the ball in free agency. So I love the move. I think when you look at the cost-benefit analysis, this was a home run by GM Nick Caserio of the Houston Texans.
Smalls?
What, do I like the move, Ev?
Yeah. I think is he the right guy? Or would you have gone for someone else?
I think that he is the right guy. I certainly would have explored other options, but to CeCe's point, I think the financials work. Steph Diggs is a proven commodity. Look at what Josh Allen was before Steph Diggs. Look what he was after. He was, as we talked about earlier, very inconsistent his first two seasons. And then when Stephon Diggs and Josh Allen got paired up, Josh Allen had his first 4,000-yard season, and he's never dipped below 4,200 yards since then. He's a proven commodity. And with C.J. Stroud on his rookie deal, the fact that the Houston Texans are realizing that they have a finite amount of time to maximize this window, given everything he's proven last year, I think it's a great move. I think that having Steph Diggs will make C.J. Stroud better, which is a scary thought. And I also think it's going to make the offense very interesting because are people going to put more focus on Steph Diggs now that he's out on the field, which could open things up for other people or vice versa? It's just another versatile weapon that the Houston Texans are adding to their arsenal. And I think for Steph Diggs, if things really were that bad in Buffalo, it might be a place for him to go and kind of restart. He might be hungry to prove himself in another market with another team. I think it's a win-win all around.
Do we look at this and worry at all, though, about Steph Diggs having a big personality? That's totally okay. Having a big contract that could get bigger, again, totally okay. And worry at all about the infiltration of leadership with C.J. Stroud and D'Amico Ryans in the Houston Texans? Like, we have all sat here and praised the idea that those two are the faces of the organization and what they say goes. Are we worried at all about what Steph Diggs may or may not do to that?
No.
No, I'm not as worried about it. I mean, I guess it's a concern until you actually see it, because all we've known is Steph Diggs being a malcontent no matter where he's been. But
right.
I think from a cultural standpoint, it's a better fit for him with D'Amico Ryans and C.J. Stroud than it was with Kirk Cousins and Mike Zimmer in Minnesota, or than it was with Sean McDermott and Josh Allen in Buffalo. So I would like to think that that locker room is in a position to be able to absorb a personality like Steph Diggs, and I think the communication, because of the culture down there in Houston, can be a little bit easier, can be more open, honest, and transparent. So I think those things matter when evaluating whether or not Steph Diggs is worth the risk. But then also, I can't help but think about what that offense could be now that you've added a receiver that can dictate front and coverage, somebody that can change the math for the offense in a positive way, create room for all of the other skill position players, whether it's Joe Mixon in the running game or it's Nico Collins and Tank Dell and Dalton Schultz in the passing game. Steph Diggs is going to attract a lot of attention, and that's going to clear up the picture for those players, those skill position guys, but it's also going to clear up the picture in terms of what defenses are doing for C.J. Stroud. And so I think, based on those things, regardless of what the actual numbers are that Steph Diggs would produce in the way of catches and yards, I think it makes so much sense for Houston to do this. I think this move puts Houston in that upper echelon and makes them one of three teams in the AFC that have a chance of knocking off the Kansas City Chiefs in 2024 to get to the Super Bowl.
Before this move with Steph Diggs, would you have put the Texans in that same conversation?
No.
I feel like a lot of us had them right there, but you're saying this vaults them into a completely different category.
Yeah, they just didn't have enough this past year. Like, I remember watching that divisional round game in Baltimore, and that was a dogfight in the first half of that game. But you saw that Baltimore just had more firepower on the offensive side of the ball in that second half. And that's what has to change for the Houston Texans. And Steph Diggs is going to do that in a major way. Six straight years, he's been a 1,000-yard receiver. This guy's had over 100 catches five times in his career. Through the first nine seasons in an NFL career, he is third in terms of most catches behind Antonio Brown and Marvin Harrison. That's how prolific Steph Diggs is. Nobody ever questioned whether or not Steph Diggs is a number one receiver,
right,
whether or not he's one of the best in the game. That is all known. The question is, can he make it work? Can he have that synergy with the quarterback that translates to overall team success, being able to win and win big? That's the thing that has yet to be seen, but we know that Steph Diggs has had a positive impact on quarterbacks in the way of the quarterback's production.
And to your question, Evan, about whether or not we think that Diggs is going to have a negative effect on C.J. Stroud and the Texans, I don't. And I know we only have a small sample size of D'Amico Ryans and C.J. Stroud and the culture that they've built in Houston, but based on what we saw last year, the incredible success and growth that they were able to have in one season in Houston, why would I doubt them?
Because it's one season.
I was just going to say completely different scenario, but Russell Wilson has a history that precedes him. And even though Mike Tomlin obviously has a bigger track record than D'Amico Ryans and C.J. Stroud do, we are saying that this is an opportunity for Russell Wilson to go somewhere and change the way that people think about him, to just let the talent do the talking because he's in an environment like that. Why can't we apply that same thing to Steph Diggs?
Well, okay, so a couple of things on this, and I want to get back to the other two teams because you mentioned the Texans here as the one of three teams that can contend with the Chiefs. But if you look at last year, the final seven games of the season for the Buffalo Bills, when they started winning games, Steph Diggs, who basically is a 100-yard receiver a game, averaged 41 yards per game for the final seven games. They were 7-2 last year when he was targeted under 10 times, 4-4 when he was targeted more than 10 times. So the connection in Buffalo obviously was not there. That does not mean the connection in Houston won't be there. But CeCe, you said that Houston now catapults themselves into a group of three total teams that you think theoretically could beat the Kansas City Chiefs in the AFC. Who are the other two?
The Baltimore Ravens, obviously, and then the Cincinnati Bengals if Joe Burrow comes back healthy. Those are the other two teams.
And would you rank them in what?
I don't want to rank them, man. I think they're all three right
all
there.
All three?
All three of them are right
all
there.
All tied for first?
All tied for first. They're all right there. I mean, they're all angling to knock off the Kansas City Chiefs. It's Patrick Mahomes, it's Andy Reid. What's understood ain't got to be said. But, I mean, those teams have the requisite pieces. Do you have an elite quarterback, a top five guy at the position? Check that box. Do you have a dominant pass catcher? Check that box. I mean, do you have a defense that can hold people down? Check that box. Like, they all have that. So it's just a matter of, you know, them being able to put it all together and play their best ball in the postseason when you have to face off against Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid. So I think that those teams are head and shoulders above the rest of the AFC field when it comes to being true contenders, true challengers to the guys out in Arrowhead.
Right. So then if you look at the fallout from that quickly, we're looking at Houston as a top four team in the AFC. Buffalo is no longer in that top four in the AFC. Best case scenario, they're five. Ironically, there is not another AFC East team in that top four. So they still have a path, right? There's still a path if you're a believer in Buffalo. It's just going to be a lot harder because Houston may have catapulted themselves above the Buffalo Bills.
But it's a lot harder by their own choice. It's a lot harder for Josh Allen and for Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean by their own choice. What they're telling us is that it's addition by subtraction. They damn well better be right when it comes to the Josh Allen of it all and him being elite, because he's going to have to be a force multiplier based on the overhaul that's happened on that roster this offseason.
Coming up, CeCe's got his first mock draft. There are five quarterbacks in the first round. Who gets left out? We'll find out next. It's on Sportsmanlike on ESPN Radio.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's electricebikes.com.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
I just need to go behind the scenes a little bit because I heard the making of this. This is fascinating how this works. I literally heard Nuno say to Pat, two of our producers, you got an AI intro for Canny here? Pat's like, yeah, I got it. Is that how that works? Is that the world we're now in where we can just create AI intros for Canny's mock draft?
I can make an AI intro for anything. I'll make one for next segment. What do you want?
All right. Make an AI intro
for positive
for
programming?
No. Oh, yeah. Well, we have positive programming, so we actually have an intro for that.
Let's do one at top of nine. We have Monica coming on, so let's do it that.
Okay.
There it is.
All right.
Like
what do we want it to be? Do we want it to be burritos? The argument about breakfast burritos versus regular burritos?
Sure.
Do that?
Has the burrito done more for breakfast or dinner?
Find out at 9 a.m. Eastern time.
All right, Pat's going to make the AI-generated intro. All right, CC, Mock Draft 1.0 will be available at Unsports ESPN on social coming up. Let's go through what you have here. You have five quarterbacks in the first round of the NFL draft.
Mm-hmm.
One is Caleb Williams to Chicago. I don't think we need to go much further on that.
We can write that one in pen now, can't we?
Yeah, dinner with the Bears reportedly
Sharpie,
last night.
Yeah, we can put that one in Sharpie. Caleb Williams to Chicago. That's a done deal.
All right, number two overall. We know that Washington is taking a quarterback. CC, which quarterback is Washington going to take?
I got the Washington Commanders taking Drake May, quarterback from UNC. And listen, I think Jaden Daniels is a fine player, but I am most confident that Drake May is the quarterback in this draft class that won't go bust. And the things that make me confident, first and foremost, is who he was coached by. This guy was coached by Josh McCown in high school, and he's mentored by Phillip Rivers now. Not to mention, he was under Mac Brown at UNC. They played a little bit of an air raid offense down there, and there are a lot of similarities in the principles and the philosophy that UNC had on offense to what Cliff Kingsbury is going to bring to the Washington Commanders. Drake May showed the ability to be able to set the protections in college. He showed the ability to be able to turn his back on hard play action to defenses and then whip his head around, get his hips around, and throw the football. I think those are skill sets that translate well to the pro game. And then there's his stature. This guy is 6'4", 225, 230 pounds. He's a sturdy-looking quarterback. He's got enough athleticism to be able to move around, to buy time and extend downs and take off and run if he has to. One of the things I love about his game is that he doesn't go broke by taking a profit all the time. He'll take the underneath routes, the checkdowns when they're there, when the defense gives it to him. He's shown the ability to be able to layer throws in a way that I haven't necessarily seen from Jaden Daniels. So I love Drake May. Last thing I'll say about him, the pedigree. Drake May's father played quarterback at UNC. Both his brothers played on the UNC basketball team. And then he had another brother that won a national title as a baseball player at Florida. So, I mean, this is a competitive family of athletes. And so I think that there is a part of that competition, that DNA that he's going to inject into the Washington Commanders. I think that's something that's easy to fall in love with him. I love the prospect in Drake May, second overall to the Commanders.
Well, that means Jaden Daniels goes three, obviously. We know that Williams, May, and Daniels are going 1, 2, 3 in some capacity. But he's not going three to New England. Where is he going, CeCe?
No, and the Patriots need a quarterback. I just don't think Jaden Daniels is their guy, right? You think about all of the elements. You think about putting Jalen Daniels in that type of environment. He's not the biggest of frames when it comes to, you know, sturdier quarterbacks. So I think there's got to be that concern as well. Now, here's the thing. Jaden Daniels sees the field as good as any quarterback in his class. The ability to be able to process information and get the ball to the open receiver, I think that's a huge part of his game. And so I think this is the spot where Elliott Wolf and Jerod Mayo, the brain trust of the Patriots, say, you know what? We're going to trade down and stockpile picks, and the team that I've got moving up is the Minnesota Vikings. Ooh. They're going to package 11 and 23 along with some other draft capital. So they're going to give the Patriots 11, 23, and a fourth-round pick this year and include a third-round pick in 2025 in order to make that jump into the top three and get an elite prospect at the quarterback position. I mean, adding Jaden Daniels to that offense and having another prominent LSU player, Justin Jefferson, to throw the football to, that seems like it's a little bit spicy. Not to mention Jordan Addison, not to mention TJ Hawkinson and what they're doing on that side of the ball. So I like what Minnesota is building right now, and I just think they're going to be able to take that thing to the next level, adding Jaden Daniels. I think they make the move to get to the top three rather than settling for being fourth or fifth and being at the mercy of what the teams in front of them do. They're going to get one of the truly elite prospects at the quarterback position in this class.
I love that, CC. I love the Vikings having the capital to jump up and get their guy. And we talked about it earlier this week about all the pieces that are in place for that quarterback that they draft to settle in there. New England's not really in a place to move forward. So if so, why wouldn't you trade out, get more capital to build your team across the board rather than take a quarterback at three? I love it.
If Minnesota gets Jaden Daniels, my guesstimation is they become in 2025 what the Packers and Texans are in 2024, which is the hot pick to upset some people, go to the Super Bowl with a second-year starter, or second-year as a starter, I should say, like with Jordan Love and C.J. Stroud. All right, two more quarterbacks go in the first round. J.J. McCarthy goes 9, and Michael Penix Jr. goes 13. Well, wait a minute. J.J. McCarthy goes 9? How? The Bears have that pick. Not in CC's mock draft, they don't. Two AFC West teams in the mix here. Denver trades up to get 9, and the Raiders take Penix at 13. Why on both, CC?
Okay, so the Chicago Bears are looking for a wide receiver, but I think this is a spot where the Denver Broncos are targeting to try to get up to get their quarterback because they've got to get in front of a team like the New England Patriots that could be in the quarterback market. So I think they make the jump into the top 10 to get J.J. McCarthy. Listen, Sean Payton has got to have something to sell to ownership that they are on the right track, and I think the hope of J.J. McCarthy is just that in terms of being able to display the skill set that will operate Sean Payton's offense. J.J. McCarthy has been great at throwing the ball in between the numbers. He's shown himself to be an accurate quarterback. He's got the requisite athleticism to be able to manipulate the pocket, to move outside of the pocket. So I like J.J. McCarthy going to the Denver Broncos. And for the Chicago Bears, you pick up some more draft capital. You don't have a ton of day two draft capital, so you pick up some extra draft capital later on in this draft, but also for the 2025 draft so you can continue to build around Caleb Williams. I just think it makes a whole lot of sense. And then with Michael Penix Jr., the Las Vegas Raiders can stay exactly where they're at. And my former teammate, new head coach Antonio Pierce, can get the quarterback that, from a talent standpoint, can help his program compete with the likes of the Kansas City Chiefs and the LA Chargers out there in the AFC West. I love Michael Penix Jr. I think he's the fourth best quarterback in his class. But I think the injury concerns is what puts him fifth off the board in this draft class. But make no mistake, it's not for a lack of having talent. It's not because we haven't seen him make big boy throw after big boy throw. How else do you explain how Washington got to the college football playoff and in the national championship game? It's because of that dude, Michael Penix Jr. And here's the thing, Smalls, we got proof of concept at two Power 5 conferences. He did it in the Big Ten with Indiana. He just did it in Washington. So much so that Kalen DeBoer, the Washington former head coach, got a job at Alabama to succeed Nick Saban. That's how good Michael Penix Jr. is.
I love both of those fits. And it feels like the personalities would fit in both places. You mentioned pedigree with Drake May. The pedigree of J.J. McCarthy seems like it would be something that would be really intriguing to Sean Payton in Denver. The fact that he's a Jim Harbaugh protege, the fact that he's malleable, and Sean Payton certainly wants to find his quarterback to develop his system around. I think that could be a great fit. And Michael Penix Jr. has a toughness and an intensity about him that I think would really mesh well with Antonio Pierce and the culture that he's building with the Raiders.
CC, before we get to positive programming coming up, how about Bo Nix? He's out of the first round in this scenario. We've heard a lot of people say he could be a fit with Denver if they stay still at 12 and not have the opportunity to draft McCarthy in that spot. Bo Nix, out of the first round for you.
Yeah, he's out of the first round. I don't see NFL arm. I just don't. So we'll see what ends up happening. He's played a lot of football. He's played in some big conferences, the SEC and the Pac-12, but I don't see NFL arm, and it's hard to have success if you can't drive the football in this league.
Coming up, Smalls has positive programming brought to us by Skechers. Next, it's on Sportsmanlike on ESPN Radio.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
Positive programming brought to you by Skechers Footwear. Stylish comfort for men, women, and kids. Smalls, give us some positive programming, please.
Let's smile a little bit, guys, shall we? It is a rainy, dreary day here in New York City on this Thursday, but let's inject some sunshine into our day. All right, first up, we got to start with the LSU women's basketball team. A couple things that I loved coming from them, unfortunately, after their loss to Iowa in the Elite Eight. First of all, we got to talk about Angel Reese, the queen. The Bayou Barbie announced yesterday that she is taking her talents to the WNBA. And she didn't just put out a little statement on Instagram. She didn't just make a video, guys. She announced that she's going to the WNBA with a photo shoot in Vogue.
Wow.
In Vogue. If we want to talk about all these measurables that we have about the growth of the WNBA and how important it is in our sports hierarchy, the fact that Angel Reese is announcing her intent to go to the WNBA and the biggest fashion publication in the world tells you exactly where the WNBA and women's basketball is, and I love it.
That's incredible. To be in Vogue? I mean, that's big time. I mean, for her to be able to make her announcement in that way, that is player if I ever seen it.
Ultimate flex
is unquestioned. But I mean, again, the growth of the game, it just shows that these players are starting to transcend the bounds of what we've seen in women's sports. And that's a good thing. We should be all applauding what Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark mean to women's sports, because they are now household names and they've got people paying more attention to their competitions in their respective leagues. So this is exciting if you're a fan of women's sports, and it's only up from here.
It also tells us that Angel Reese knew all along her decision, right? Because she's like, I don't know, we'll see. She had already done the photo shoot with Vogue. She knew what she was doing. Very smart move. It's not. I'm not suggesting a lie, but keeping it private so she can release it that way. Good move, Angel Reese.
It was a good move, and you're right. It is transcendent. The fact that it's beyond sports, it's beyond ESPN. The fact that Vogue is so aware of Angel Reese and collegiate women's basketball that they want her to make that announcement with their publication is so massive. But Evan, to your point about Angel Reese knowing what she was going to do already after her season ended, maybe that's a reason why she was a little bit emotional in her post game after that Elite Eight loss to Iowa. She spoke about the hate that she's received since last year's national championship game. She was very pointed about the fact that even though people want to make her out to be a villain, that she's a human being.
Yeah.
And it's hard for her sometimes to process all these emotions with people coming at her all the time. One thing I loved about that, guys, and this is the part of positive programming, is the way her teammates stood up for her after she made that comment. Flajay Johnson and Haley Van Lith both came to Angel Reese's defense after those comments about her being a villain and dealing with the emotions that come along with it. Here's what it sounded like.
the media, y'all, how they like to twist and call it a villain and all of that, y'all don't know Angel, bro. And I'm just happy that I get to play with her. I get to be around her presence. Her energy is different. Like, she just make me a better player. She make me a better player, and that's what great players do.
Angel's one of the toughest people I've been around. People speak hate into her life. I've never seen people wish bad things on someone as much as her, and it does not affect her. She comes to practice every day. She lives her life every day. She lives how she wants to live, and she don't let nobody change that. And, you know, that's the key to life right there. Y'all do not get to her. Let me say it again. Y'all do not get to Angel Reese, so you might want to give it up. Throw the towel in because you're wasting your energy. So Angel's one of the toughest people I've been around.
I just love that her teammates, unprompted, jumped in to defend her and talk about the importance in their lives that she's had. And I just love the whole sisterhood that this LSU team has, and it's great to see it on display.
Yeah, I think with her teammates coming to her defense, that speaks to her character. Now, you still don't get to cry at the podium when you're trying to play the villain role. Like, she's the one that was like, hey, if that makes me the villain, then so be it. But I'm willing to do that because I know I'm growing to women's great. That's cool, but you don't get to cry when you're playing the villain role. I appreciate the teammates stepping up in your defense. It says that you're a good leader. It says that they respect you. There are sure a lot of things behind the scenes that she does to be a good teammate, to be a good friend, to be a good leader. I'm sure all of those things are true. All of the leadership intangibles in a positive way. Still can't cry at the podium, Angel. Can't do it. Not when you say you're willing to be the villain. Can't do it.
CeCe taking my angle here of spinning positive programming brought to us by Skechers negatively.
But how can you make it negative programming when she got Anna Wintour on speed dial?
Correct.
Like, I'm gonna let you know whether or not I'm gonna go to the WNBA. Hey Anna, go ahead and release the photo shoot and tell them I'm going.
Shout out to Devil Wears Prada. Great movie. Anyway, go ahead, Smalls, next one.
I was going to say, that's a Beyonce-like move. I have a big announcement to make. Anna, can you get the team here to photograph me?
Yeah, get the glam squad here. Let's go.
Unbelievable. Another thing that I loved coming out of the Elite Eight on the women's side was the game after LSU-Iowa when you had UConn and USC battling. Paige Beckers consoled Juju Watkins after the game. You saw Juju really have a lot of emotion after that loss. Paige Beckers went out of her way in the line after the game to hug her and give her words of comfort. That was sportsmanship at its highest level, and I absolutely loved to see it.
No, it's great. I mean, just to be there to support the incoming freshman. I mean, Juju Watkins had a phenomenal season, nothing to hang her head about. But, I mean, for Paige Beckers to be able to relate to her in that way, to understand the pressure, the expectations that comes along with being the person that's supposed to elevate the entire program, I guess that recognition is pretty cool when you can see it. And, again, it's a sisterhood. Like you talked about it with what they got going on with LSU and that program with Kim Mulkey, but I think it goes beyond that. I think they all recognize their place and their platform in growing women's sports and growing women's college basketball. So I think that recognition by Paige Beckers, that awareness, is a pretty cool thing to see.
And tomorrow night, all of it on ESPN, NC State, South Carolina, UConn, Iowa, beginning at 7 p.m. Eastern, then 9 p.m. Eastern for the UConn-Iowa game. Smalls, positive programming brought to us by Skechers.
Next up, we talk about the growth in the women's game and the increase in popularity. Let's transition to the men's side, men's college basketball. Has anyone gained more love or more popularity throughout this tournament than DJ Burns from NC State?
Hey.
Everybody.
Don't DJ.
That's my DJ.
Everybody absolutely loves DJ Burns. And whether it's at the next level in basketball or the next level in another sport, we want to follow along the DJ Burns journey. He joined Dan Patrick and was asked about those rumors and speculation that maybe he would join an NFL team if it doesn't work out in the NBA. Here's what he had to say.
Yeah, but you want to play in the NBA, correct?
Yes, sir. That's the plan.
Okay, if you don't make it, would football be something that you would at least think about playing?
I mean, I'd probably explore some other options with basketball first before all of that, but I'm not a closed-minded person.
Not a closed-minded person. Guys, just the thought of DJ Burns somehow suiting up for an NFL team made me smile. I would love to see that happen.
All right, I mean, so I'm going to put feet to the fire on this, both of you. If I told you he was going to end up in a Hall of Fame, basketball or football?
Football.
Really?
Football. Yeah.
Why?
I mean, feet to the fire. I mean, the footwork. The DJ Burns shows on the basketball.
Well, you took it literally.
That's exactly what you're looking for in a left tackle. DJ Burns, a $20 million a year left tackle.
Come on home, DJ.
Thanks for listening to the Unsportsmanlike podcast on ESPN Radio. You can listen to Unsportsmanlike live weekdays from 6 to 10 a.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, and on SiriusXM Channel 80. You can also watch on ESPN2 and on ESPNU. Unsportsmanlike with Evan Canty and Michelle.